Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Last week, Lake Preston farmer Paul Casper was recognized as the 2019 Governor's Ag Ambassador. Governor Kristi Noem announced Casper as the Ag Ambassador Award winner in June. Casper grew up on his family's farm in Lake Preston, where he farms today with his son. A key player in South Dakota's soybean industry, Casper has served as president of the South Dakota Soybean Association. His dedication to agriculture has also gone hand in hand with protecting our natural resources. We meet the 2019 Governor's Ag Ambassador as he joins us by phone from Lake Preston. Paul Casper, congratulations. Welcome to In the Moment.
Thank you very much, Lori. That was a pretty neat event that happened that day. So for my family and I, it was a very fun day.
Let's take us there. What was that event like?
Well, when this whole process started, actually I was trying to get crop in the spring when they got a hold of me, and it was Ag Secretary Veneman that called me up, and I've known her for quite a while, and we were just doing some visiting, talking about farming, and all of a sudden I go, so what's this, what's you up, what's going on,
yeah.
All about, and she said, well, that's something I want to talk to you about, and then she told me, and so that was pretty neat. So we've known a little bit about it for a while, and so just leading up to it, hoping that I could get my mom and dad and my wife's parents, so my mother and father-in-law, who are, when you have a family farm, it's very instrumental in your growth, and not only as a person, but then in farming too. And so then was able to have our son there too. And that was a really, really fun day to have them involved with the whole event. And Ag Secretary Veneman and Governor Noem did a great job of involving that aspect of it. So it was really a fun day.
And that's an opportunity, really. So much of your story is about South Dakota farmers, but it's also about family and your work with your parents, bringing your son back to the farm, your connection with your wife and the supportive relationship you have. It must have really had some meaning for you all to be together. It's not just an award for you, is it?
Well, it is very much so. It's, looking back, and I got involved in this whole thing when I was 35 years old, so that was 26 years ago now. I'm 61. So, you look back and, the dedication that they had, I was gone an awful lot. And so leaving, Corlin home with four younger children and having to take care of them when I'm out and about kind of doing our thing and her dedication and believing in that this is the right thing for not only our family, but for all of our friends and neighbors, our farmer friends, and so then it just evolved from that. And, you're gone then, you probably should be doing some stuff out in the field while you're gone doing some meetings. And, it took us, 4 years to get this soybean processing project from conception to finally having groundbreaking. So, hundreds of meetings and phone calls and frustration because you just, because at one point it just about fell apart, and we were able to kind of gather the troops and great supporting cast of board members and other people in the media and, everybody trying to get this thing done. And we were lucky enough to do that and had a groundbreaking ceremony. And, the processing plant and the people have been doing such a great job in running that business. So it's just been, it's fun to see it when you drive by and know that you're a part of it with a great group of people.
And so for folks who don't know, we're talking about the South Dakota Soybean Processors, a cooperative in Volga, and it's the first farmer-owned soybean processing plant. Why was it so significant to have that here in South Dakota, to bring that right home? What was it like before?
Well, everything we've produced here for a number of years has just basically been shipped out, processed, and I mean pretty much everything except livestock when we had the processing facility with Morel and stuff down in Sioux Falls running. But everything was, all of our farm products for production A was shipped out of here and then brought back. And so you're paying shipping out and you're paying shipping back. So it was costing us. And they talk about the basis level. For us to get our product to Mississippi River, to get it to the processors so it can be made into animal feed or food products or whatever, And we're actually getting a double hit on that for the cost. We're losing money being shipped out. We're paying more to get it here. And so the process of just, you know, getting it closer to the shelf locally just made so much sense, you know. Right. And we sit there and the meetings that we had and the people that we talked to where these projects were successful, you know, it just made so much sense. So anytime we could, you know, get an opportunity to do that, get ourselves closer to the shelves or to the consumer, it's a better profit chance for the local growers. So that was the main driving force. And it took a little bit of convincing or people to kind of open up, you know, get those blinders off and kind of see that, get out of the box thinking. You know, we've been so programmed to, you know, take care of the ground, plant, grow, harvest, and then take it to the elevator, open up the end gate, and now somebody else has it. Well, now we're opening the end gate to ourselves, so it just made a lot of sense.
It seems like there's so many things in ag today, and maybe this is, you know, true of every generation for farmers, but in the nature of the industry, you always have to be thinking about how things have changed. Some things never change, and then everything else does. Tell me a little bit about being a farmer and sort of being open to, you know, this idea that everything that you thought you understood might be different tomorrow, but yet, you know, there's the weather and there's the, you know, there's some things that just...
Yeah, there is the weather this year. Oh my, yeah.
And there's some things that you can't control and some things that are just always important. You know, stewardship of the land never becomes not an issue. How do you develop a mentality as a farmer that kind of puts you in a position to embrace that and thrive?
Well, you know, for like myself, I'm always looking at opportunities. And when I say that, not just for myself, but for communities. I mean, because this is where I live. And I like myself, like all of our daughters are in Minneapolis working, and they're doing fine, and they're doing great, and they've done very well for themselves and are. And we have so many of our younger people that leave here for, you know, other opportunities. And I just, if we could keep more of our children here, we're shipping out so much talent. Yeah. And I mean that. We are. We're losing talent every day. So anytime we can get manufacturing or industry or new concept thinking type projects here that get those creative minds to work and bring a tax base so we can keep our state functioning, you know, and keep the roads up and, you know, do whatever we need to do and just to have our normal lives be taken care of, I think it's very important. So I'm kind of that out-of-the-box thinker guy anyway, and, you know, some of it's, like, really off the wall, but, you know, sometimes it isn't. And so, you know, trying to figure out what and where we're going to go next, I think it's a lot of fun for me to do that. And when I sit down with a bunch of other people and we're, you know, brainstorming or think tank or whatever you want to call it, I see opportunities here and we need to grab them. And at certain times they'll work really well. And sometimes we're a little ahead of our time. And then sometimes the stars align and it's the perfect time to do it.
Yeah. So let's talk about bringing your son home and, you know, and your parents, the help that your parents kind of gave you. How do you do that well? How do you pass that knowledge and that operation on to the next generation?
Well, like my mom and dad, they you know, we were at that point in time in the 80s. We were actually growing some barley. We had barley contracts with Anheuser-Busch. So, well, that market kind of changed, and you know, because of that shipping cost for them, they were doing more of the barley growing closer to their processing facilities, which makes a lot of sense. Well, so we're losing some of that. So we got into the bean idea, and I wanted to learn how to plant beans. So, well, that's how come I got involved with the Soybean Association. And you know, looking back at that, you know, our young producers, they need to be involved socially with social media. They need to be involved in local groups. They need to learn and understand, because there's people that are on those boards that are a little bit older that went through a lot of this, and they can learn from them. And we need to have them more active, and they need to tell the story. That's, I mean, it's very obvious. We need to do that because if someone else is telling the story for us, it's probably not the way it should be told, and it doesn't have all the facts. So yeah. We ourselves need to do that more. And well, then Drew now, he had a landscape design degree, and he worked in Chicago for a couple of years. Didn't really enjoy the big city. Came back and worked up in actually the oil fields up in Newtown and Newtown, North Dakota. So he worked up there for 3 years in the oil boom, and that was a very good learning experience for him. And then he made the decision that he wanted to come back. Never asked or forced, just the opportunity was there, and he made that decision himself. And we had a lot of that happen. You know, you look back 2011, 12, 13, we had some pretty good, you know, commodity prices. Some farms are getting healed up pretty good, and then it was opportunity for the younger kids to come back. Well, now here we are in this pretty, you know, very tough commodity marketplace right now. And so, you know, I look back what my wife and I, Corla and I, went through in the early 80s when we were first married. Drew's going through the same thing with he and his wife, Amanda, and their little ones, except they don't have the 16, 17% interest rates, but very similar. And then it looks like here we go again, you know.
Right.
And so another generation going through that. We know my dad went through that when he was coming up in the farming with his dad. I mean, so that process of learning and listening and having gone through those and those conversations we have are very real. And so I look at how our farm is going to change in the future, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. What kind of advice do you give your son then that sort of just says, you know, we can endure this, we can figure it out? Do you have a sense? Is it faith? Is it trust? Is it hard work? All of those things, the innovative ideas?
It is. It's all of that. And I think diversity is probably the main one. You need to be, I mean, you have a goal, you have a game plan, but there was no one that was predicting that we'd have anything like this last February, March.
Right.
You know, I mean, so having looking at that, you need to be able to change your thought process. You need to sometimes shoot from the hip, but at the end of the day, you still need to protect what you have. And so, you know, we talk about that. So having said that, you know, this is what you're going to do, and I don't care if it's any job, you know, and that's where your heart is. Sometimes the income isn't there. So do you need to do something to diversify yourself? Like myself, I started a custom baling business when my wife and I were first married. That helped us get through the early 80s. I mean, seriously, if I didn't have that round baler running and making those 15,000 bales a year for a while there, it'd have been pretty tough. Bartended, worked at the elevator part-time, worked in the meat market in town. So actually, you know, processed beef, hogs, and sheep and went through that whole process. Plumbed. I mean, you know, if this is what you're going to do, you might have to do something else to help support it, you know?
Right.
And so it's almost like a bad habit, farming sometimes, but I hate to say that, but you do need to do that. So having said that, you know, where do you see the farming industry going? Myself, I think we're just going to get more specialized. I don't care how large a farmer that you are or small, I think there's going to be opportunities for specific crops grown for specific reasons. And you can kind of see that more and more as it's coming. And so I think in the next 5 to 10 years, there'll be actually opportunities for us to do that.
Is that a positive thing, more specialization? Is that the opposite of diversification?
You know, I don't know, because if it's going that direction and you don't move with it, then do you survive?
Yeah.
And see, that's the thing is I don't know. I think, you know, farming as we know it, having large, you know, acres of just corn, soybeans, wheat, are there going to be 100 or 200 acre partials of specialty crops in there?
Right.
Or specialty markets? And, you know, I think that's coming. If you're growing something that a consumer doesn't want, what's the market then?
Right.
So I think this is going to be more consumer-driven. I can see it more and more on social media, what they're wanting, what they think they know, whether it's wrong or right, it is what it is. So, you know, you're going to have to kind of move with that. And so we'll see where it goes. But I just see things have really changed so much in the last 5 years with the social media and blogs and what people say. I mean, they can say anything they want to, whether it's wrong or right, or if it has factual support or not. It doesn't matter. You know, and
so... Yeah. Aren't we all dealing with that now, trying to, yeah, I know, yeah, as a journalist, it can be frustrating to see some of the information that goes out there. Yeah, that's inaccurate. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about the relationships that you've been to China. You worked hard to build those markets, to build those relationships that are really kind of, some challenges right now with the President Trump's trade relationships and what's happening there. How is that working out for you?
Very frustrating. Now, having said that, I totally support what he's doing, because there's no one that's manipulated, or no entity that's manipulated the marketplace more than China. When I say that, is that they'll come in and do a large tenure of many million metric ton, for instance, of soybeans, and then a week later back out. No repercussions. So what does the market do? Drops down. Down it goes. And all of a sudden, oh, we're going to buy now. Well, for crying out loud, it's pretty obvious what's going on there. So I understand what he's saying. And then information with regards to technology that has been removed from the United States there, and them controlling it. And there's a lot of, I guess, branches to this tree. Personally, 65 to 70% of our soybeans leave South Dakota and goes to that China, that Asian market. 65 to 70%. Just like that, we lost that. Something we'd worked on for over 20 years to build personal relationships, and, you know, I just like, okay. So now we're scrambling to see where the heck we're going to go with all of these soybeans. And we are the furthest west market, which makes sense for our beans to go there because we're talking about freight again. So we are the cheapest bean for them. And so we've lost that. So you take Nebraska, North Dakota, Western Minnesota, and South Dakota. We're that market, and it's a huge impact to us. I mean, when you're looking at a $20 billion industry in South Dakota, and all of a sudden you lose your major market for soybeans. But not only that, well, now we're looking at meat. So poultry, swine and beef products, same thing. Distiller's grain, same thing. We have ethanol, same thing. They were large users of all those products.
Right.
All of a sudden, now tariffs on them.
Do you see a way forward?
It's frustrating that way, but hopefully we'll get there.
Yeah. Do you see a way forward? Do you think it's just holding on and being strong and staying the course? Do you think there needs to be a pivot in policy? Like, how do you? What makes you optimistic that it's not going to just stay that way?
Well, this is just my common sense thought. Okay, so China quits buying from us; they buy from somewhere else.
Right.
Those people that were buying from somewhere else now can come buy from us. So I really see, like, the U.S. Grains Council, American Soybean Association, National Corn Growers, the Cattlemen's Association, you know, the pork producers, all those people now are finding and getting other market opportunities. Now, is it going to be, you know, done quickly? No. It's going to take some time. But maybe at the end of this dark cloud, 3 to 5 years from now, it's opened up other market access for us that we didn't realize we could have penetrated. Hmm. Now, that's the optimistic, hopeful side of me, because that's what I just, my common sense is you got a gallon of water in a bucket, and it's still going to get used, and it maybe just goes to a different location. So, I don't know, we'll see.
All right, we'll see. Farmer Paul Casper, 2019 Governor's Ag Ambassador, congratulations, and thanks for coming on the show. You're welcome back anytime.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.